For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back! T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast is back for our second season, bigger and better than ever. Seriously though, this ish is huge! I'm your host, T-Pain. Every Tuesday, join me and my guest and my co-host for action-packed, hilarious, inspirational conversation. That's right, we're doing T-Pain Tuesday. We got the biggest guests, new drinks, new games, and crazy studio vibes. You already know what it is, and here's Nappy Boy Radio, baby. Listen and subscribe to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. Season 2 is available now, everywhere you get your podcast. You already know what it is. Come on through.
Well, in this show, we'll talk a lot about the Ring Brothers and SEMA and
some
Kevin
of Kevin Hart's cars.
Kevin
yeah,
Hart
some
stuff,
really cool stuff.
Some auction updates. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Yeah, get it on. Get it on, and welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Kroll. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello.
Fresh off his triumphant return from SEMA and Apex as well. I was out there, got to see some pretty cool stuff, some Kevin Hart cars, pretty bitchin' stuff, saw some Ring Brothers stuff, always bitchin' what the Ring Brothers do. Thoughts about SEMA and Apex?
A few things. So I didn't get over to Apex, but SEMA footprint has grown, as we've talked about. They've expanded into that West Hall, and there's now more boring tunnels connecting them with the Teslas riding underground. And but the past 2 years after it taking a break, I guess, if you will, for the pandemic, the lay of the land has been a little bit different. There's been several of the big companies that have been a staple there opted out. They filled in some of these spots with like pop-up rest areas, meeting areas, snack areas. But the feedback that I've gotten so far was it was a great SEMA. The booths were busy. Business was getting done. Kind of back to normal or back to a good situation. But there was a big announcement about the progression of SEMA. What's going to happen to the future of SEMA? How do they grow this thing? And I don't know if you read about any of the news yet, but they want to do SEMA Fest. SEMA Fest is now a week-long event, kicks off with at the beginning of the week, sort of a Goodwood or a Monterey Car Week with all sorts of things popping up around town. Mm-hmm. The main event being the SEMA show, which is the trade show. But now all of the public things that will surround this, it'll kick off with NHRA drag racing, which it normally does, but now SEMA will be more involved. More car shows and live events and music and comedy and, you know, parades and just completely take over the entire week of events and stuff. Now, SEMA back in the day was it had more of, you and I went years ago, and there was more of like the big sponsored corporate parties, or like eBay was at a nightclub, and you know, there was bottle service for stuff, and that all kind of got pulled back. It was just, I don't know if it was a super effective cost of money, but now they're trying to bring back some of that fanfare, but without having to do those types of just like invite only corporate events. Like, how do you make it more of a public thing? We always say during Monterey Car Week, sure, there's, you know, there's a Acura party that, you know, is kind of exclusive, and then there's this event and there's that event, but there's also like the exotics on Cannery Row, and there's the Concorso Italiano, and there's things you can buy tickets to, and the public can go and enjoy, and you can go to the track. So for us, with Monterey Car Week, the track for us is the main event. That's going to be the SEMA show, and then all of these things all around it. So yeah. It seems kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, car guys want more car stuff, and why not give it to them? You have a brand. You have a footprint. You have a calendar that, with a couple dates circled. Sorry. Go ahead and spread it out. And why not? It's probably the way everything is going. I mean, I'm sure Monterey, I guess, I mean, back in the day was a road race through the, you know, redwood trees, you know, back in the day. And then at some point they started the historics, and I don't know the lineage of the Rolex historics, but I would bet for the first 5 years it was just a vintage race at the track, and then at some point somebody said we should do an Italiano concourse that weekend and get some of the car guys to come over here, and then next thing you know there's cars and coffee, and that, you know, or maybe it just started as the Pebble Beach event concourse. And I guess the Pebble Beach concourse was probably there before the historics.
Yeah.
And so you start with the Pebble Beach concourse, which is SEMA, and then you go, well, let's go to the track, and then you go, let's do the Italiano, and let's have some auctions roll into town, and next thing you know, it's on.
Right, yes, I forgot that. They want to bring an auction there as well.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is there's going to be some way to sort of figure out there's going to be some really incredible builds, like from Ring Brothers and Troy Trepanier and Salvaggio and Speedcore, and some of those cars are going to probably be auctioned off. You're going to be able to buy those cars immediately. Now, they'll still be on the show floor and they'll do the thing, but they'll be like committed to the auction.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be kind of interesting. And I'm not sure who they're going to be teaming up with on the auction side. But yeah, make it an automotive destination. Monterey is great. But also think of the platform being Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. The hotels, the transportation, the restaurants. It's a great place to vacation. And you can see live shows and gamble and things like that if you want to. Yeah, it could be interesting. Now, I have said this on the other podcast, on Shift and Steer with Brad and Aaron. I said, there's going to be growing pains. Like when they changed SEMA after the pandemic and Uber first got into, you know, into Vegas, there's always some growing pains. So it takes a few years to go, oh, how do we handle transportation? And then, you know, they move the Uber lot here. And then how do you get from here to here? And how do you get into this place? You got to give it a little bit of, you got to be a little patient with the thing. But also, this all kind of came up because the Olympics, right? We hear about the Olympics are going to so-and-so town, going to L.A. So L.A. builds a bunch of shit, and maybe not L.A. is not the best example, but other countries and other areas, they build a bunch of shit, Colorado, and then the Olympics come, and then nothing gets used again, and they built facilities and whatever, right? Well, F1 is going to Vegas, and there's going to be stuff like built to support that because, you know, chances are they signed a multi-year deal. So F1's going to have some growing pains and build some stuff out and get a little better and a little more efficient on year two, year three. But now SEMA, like piggybacking the SEMA Fest onto that, maybe take advantage of some of the things that F1 is bringing to the table, you know, bringing to Vegas. Maybe there's building stuff, or maybe they are exploring ways to put grandstands along the strip to show something like the F1 race. Well, maybe SEMA can do a SEMA parade and, you know, things like that. So it's the idea of those organizations like SEMA and teaming up with F1, or at least learning from each other, might be helpful.
Agreed. All right. We also have checked out some pretty cool Ring Brother cars, and Kevin Hart had some pretty cool cars. Got to see that C1 Vette, the 59, called mint condition because it's mint colored. He paid $850 or so at auction for.
Maybe it was like $7 something with the VIG. Yeah, bought it at Barry Jackson. I was there when he bought it.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful, but I guess when he got the car back, a lot got slipped under the radar. The car wasn't quite as mint as they thought, and he had to invest quite a bit to get that car up to the caliber. And it's kind of these one of these weird things I was going to pick your brain about.
What'd he pay for that at Barrett Jackson?
You can find it. Called Mint Condition. You don't always get to see the full story on some of these cars. You go to Barrett Jackson, you're there, you're trying to crawl around the car, lean under the car, but you never really know how it runs. You really don't know the build quality under the skin, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess the car had some flaws.
835, I told you.
Sorry, 825.
Wow. 825. Wow.
I knew it started with an 8 for some reason. That's all the money in the world for a 59 vet.
Oh, my God. And people are like, oh, but it's really nice. It's really nice. So you're already into it for 8.25. And then you come back and you're like, it's not quite an 8.25 car. Do you put another... 175 into it, and it's $1 million, and then you kind of have to finish it, right? You can't be 90% there.
Yeah, he had his Barracuda, he had his Charger. We don't have on the list the Grand National.
Yeah,
that was a pretty cool piece.
That was my fault. I'm going through the list, so. He had a 69 Plymouth Barracuda called Dark Knight, and then he had a 70 Charger called Hellraiser, which I think has a Hellifent engine in it. It's 1,000 horsepower, carbon fiber body. Really cool stuff. Actually, the notes that I read on this article said it was called Dark Knight, but I don't think it is. I think it's called Michael Myers of the movie Halloween, because the Ring brothers built – that white 69 Camaro, if you remember that car, that's a friend of Kevin Hart's. They built that car and they named it Strode, who I believe in the Halloween movies is a character that doesn't get killed by Michael Myers. So he made a white car that was the counterpoint of Kevin Hart's Mike Myers car. And Ring Brothers built it for him. And that was just kind of a fun – I just found that out. We just interviewed Goldberg and I just talked to Ring Brothers.
I don't abide by the super custom car that's the automatic. I don't like it. I want a stick shift in there.
I agree, but a lot of what's happening now is the more modern day 6-speed, 10-speed transmissions, paddle shift.
I get it. The Ring brothers who just never disappoint. They had the Chevy truck, the 48, which is. I don't even like trucks, but this had nothing to do with a truck. And the detail, I mean, it's just exquisite. Exquisite. I don't care if you're a car person. You have to come up on that thing. It was a piece of jewelry. The Blazer, the 72 Blazer they did was really cool, especially the interior with the shock absorbers on the seats and the kind of mesh seating. I think the big problem if you're the Ring brothers is you have to outdo yourself every time, and it's you're running out of real estate.
They've done 8 or 9 of these Blazers, and this one was actually not built specifically for the SEMA show. What they were telling me was they built this a while ago. The owners had the car for about 6 months or so and driving it and having fun with it, and there was an opportunity to show it at SEMA, so they brought it out. And the theme with that was meant to be an open-air, off-road vehicle. It actually has a full, like pre-runner suspension. It has a foot of travel on the suspension, and it's been meant to be able to clean the whole thing out. The seats, as you mentioned, kind of float off the off the floor. The rear seat just attaches to the roll cage; it doesn't attach to the floor.
Looks everything like there's some quick releases on some of the stuff as I put my head in there.
And there's removable panels on the floorboards as well, so you can actually just kind of wash and clean this whole thing out.
How much tough mudding are you doing in this $800,000 vehicle? You know,
what's funny is I would say normally none, but Ring Brother clients for some reason end up putting miles on their cars. They did a really nice 65 Mustang convertible for a guy, and he, and he brought it back in to get freshened up. In a year, he put 7,000 miles on that car. He's just drove it everywhere.
That is a ton for that type of car. But, you know, this stuff's exquisite. And you can't – there's nowhere you can look where you don't see something that is just amazing. There's no – I mean, look – A custom car is not much different than a custom house. It's like everything adds up. It just adds up. And, you know, when you're building a custom house, you can go with some stock baseboard that, you know, that may be in the house down the street. But, and you could kind of go, well, then who cares? You know, it's just baseboard or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it's true. But once you start doing that, eventually the numbers add up. And like, you'll see guys do custom cars, but then you pop the hood and you see some pretty basic hose clamps or something on it. And it's like, all right, well, we're not adding a couple of points. Maybe we'll deduct a few. But with them, they just figured out every fastener, every screw, every bit must be. And I've always said, I always hated when someone would do a nice custom car, sometimes even like in the Chip Foose era back in the 90s or something, and then on comes the billet steering wheel that you've seen on 15 other cars. Yeah. And it's like, but that's the standard billet wheel that everyone uses, you know? And it's like, yeah, but this is a custom car.
Yeah, you got to make it one-off now.
Yeah, and it used to be that, well, you do a custom car, but the billet wheel was kind of a stock item, and sometimes the rims, billet rims, would be like a stock item, maybe like a stick shift knob or something. Now everything is just one off.
It is, and what these guys are able to do now, and going from a sketch to a CAD file to several 3D printed plastic prototypes, and then machined out of aluminum or metal or something at that point, it's phenomenal. I don't know that it's a cost savings bit.
I don't think so.
But certainly fewer materials, machining stuff out of aluminum is going through tons of it. But you know, the details on these cars, you wouldn't be able to go through all of them just being on the SEMA show floor. I mean, something easy like the Blazer, it seems easy, is the red gas can that you see in the back that just looks like a couple of gallons. That's the fuel filler, because they didn't want to put a hole in the fender. So which looks like a gas can, you fill in there.
Sweet.
And those woven straps to make up the seat, they said, well, if you did them out of leather, they would stretch, it wouldn't work. They actually had to do vinyl straps first and then wrap the vinyl in leather so it wouldn't stretch and change the look of that leather. And then that 48 truck that you were talking about, this is IndyCar meets, you know, an old work truck. This thing is so over the top, so many details. But you don't even notice it until later. They're like, you don't see a single wire on that car. Everything is so hidden. Even up underneath the dash where you'd normally put ECUs and wires, it's not there. It's hidden in the floorboards. It's underneath.
Yeah, the engine's in the front. The radiator's in the back or the middle.
Yeah.
Mid.
Right behind the cab. Yeah. They made a carbon fiber shroud that scoops from the sides to bring in the radiator in. But one of the things we talked about on this vehicle with them is this was an opportunity for them to show off a lot of things you wouldn't see. Everything is pretty much exposed. That cantilever suspension, where the bed of the truck would be, there's no bed. You just see suspension and cooling systems and carbon fiber scoops and roll cage stuff. Like, it's really over the top.
It's exquisite. And the Mustang, which is called Patriarch 69 Mustang, is beautiful. The Camaro is beautiful. 69 Camaro, called Strode. Now the Grand National is named Dark Knight, and the Roadrunner is named Michael Myers. That's what Chris says.
Okay.
The problem with the Ring Brothers, and they're two of the nicest guys ever, is the stuff is so good that you almost assume a lot of it left the factory that way. I mean, you don't, but I think many would. Like, they do such an incredible job on their body work that sometimes you go, you know, it's sort of like, you see how the bumper, the rear bumper on the Camaro or the Mustang left the factory.
Yeah.
Right. And then these guys shave it down and French it in and tuck it up and
yeah.
the margins and the gaps are all perfect.
They're all perfect.
And you just go to the back of the car and you go, yeah, that's how they should have. That's how I would have done it. That's yeah. how, why didn't leave Dearborn in 1969 with that?
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of people, I don't think, assume it did leave Dearborn that way. Just you do, it's like when you do good architecture, people never really stop and appreciate it. They just walk into the house and go, yeah, that's how I would have done it.
Yeah.
But they don't really realize you have a blank sheet of paper. You yeah. may not have made these same decisions.
That white Camaro, like you said, it looks like a really nice Camaro, but that's a full carbon fiber body. There's no metal on that thing, which they built from scratch. It's widened a little bit. The front wheels are pushed forward
an
inch and a half.
A lot, I think.
And so the wheelbase has been extended an inch and a half because the front wheels have been pushed forward, in front of the engine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just everything has been touched on that thing. And then you look at it and go, yeah, yeah, it looks like a Camaro. It's like, yeah, I could see, you know, the paint's good and they, you know, put their mirrors and their door handles on it. Like, no, you can't even begin to understand all of the details. But I think it also, I like the competition between the builders. There's literally that show, Battle of the Builders, which, by the way, they won overall, and they won two of the four categories.
They won the 4x4 category,
with the Blazer, and then they won with the truck, the 48 truck. They won the hot rod category and the overall win. So two of the four categories they won. But the Mustang that he was showing us, Mike, I was just talking with him again, and Jim, and they were like, look at the interior of that car. It has that 69 Mustang feel, but with the floating pods above the dash, and they were so, so happy and proud of that interior, the way that worked.
Yeah.
And the side scoops on the rear fenders, quarters of the 69 Mustang, theirs flows through. The air goes channels through the body and goes out the taillights, which they 3D printed.
Yeah.
Taillights, like such cool stuff.
It's marvelous stuff. And I know they're doing a DB5 or 6,
yeah.
I think, which will be.
Yeah, the Aston Martin.
The next iteration for this hobby will be, you know, it's kind of what Singer did. So what the Ring brothers do, and, you know, what Kevin Hart is into and stuff, is they get a Dodge Charger and then they do the best they can with a Dodge Charger.
Yeah.
But the Dodge Charger's kind of bulky and, you know, has some decent lines, but not all great. And you do the best you can, like a fat chick who's got like 5 weeks until her wedding. and it's like you put her on that diet, you get her that liposuction, you do all the stuff you can, but the product is going to be better.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be what it could have been.
Right.
If we'd started with a different model.
Right, yeah.
Now, what you have with Singer, as I always say, is now you're starting with a good shape. And then you see what Singer does. When you start with a good shape, then you go next level. Because the beginning shape was good.
Yeah.
The 69 Mustang's a little bit that way. The Camaro's a little bit that way. But I think what we're going to start seeing is people going, look, if I'm going to give the Ring brothers $800,000 to build me a car, why do I start with a $7,500 shell?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I should just go get some Beater DB something or Jaguar XK something or a Dino Ferrari with a blown engine or something. And, like, I'm paying $800 instead of $4,500 for the donor. Why not pay $250,000? I'll be all in at $1,050,000 or, you know, whatever the math is. But here's our jumping off point.
Right, yeah. You know, an interesting example similar to that would be that 48 truck that they did that we were just talking about. That started off as this crazy sort of indie car style chassis. And then it had a certain shape, certain size to it, because that truck's not very big.
No.
Right? And the muscle cars, you're saying, they are very big. And they wanted to build some type of vehicle that would show off a lot of those components. That's why everything is so exposed mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, what if we had some sort of truck cab, right? So now all you're doing is creating the cockpit.
Right.
Right? And, you know, the hood's removable, the back, everything. There's nothing in the back. So that's what it was. Now, what's interesting is I asked them, how much of the concept rendering is accurate to the final product? And they said, oh, every time you do a rendering of, you know, these muscle cars and things like that, they're all so slammed to the ground with a big wheel. And you look at the sketch and they're like, you couldn't drive it.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but this thing, because it's an open wheel car, there was no liberties taken. They said, this thing is almost exactly 100 point to the sketch. To the rendering of it, because the stance and the look of the whole thing and the custom center lock wheels and everything they did was spot on. It was really designed that way from the get-go.
What else are you thinking about in the automotive space, man?
Well, I just wanted to touch on the Kevin Hart car, the Grand National. Grand Nationals is starting to pop up, right? We're seeing them on Bring a Trailer. They're pulling big money. The Roadster shop brought a Grand National out, and it was absolutely amazing. Kevin Hart's Grand National, the thought process there was he already has a Grand National. He has one very low miles, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand miles. And the thought was he was going to go over that car, like give it the treatment, the Dave Salvaggio treatment. And then in talking, they're like, you know what, maybe just don't touch that one. Keep it all original. We'll find something else. And they found one with like an engine swap, and it wasn't all original, so they didn't feel that bad.
Get a Buick Regal and just sort of go at it?
I mean, I guess you could, yeah. I mean,
it seems like you should just get an 87 Buick Regal. I mean, as long as you're taking it down to the bone.
Right. And in this car, I think maybe they were looking for it, and they happened to come upon a Grand National that was an engine swap and just wasn't worth as much.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was, you know, the Grand National is a six-cylinder, single turbo. How do we modernize all of that? So they went with the Cadillac ATS turbocharged six-cylinder, mm-hmm. and they converted it from a twin turbo to a single turbo, a larger single turbo, mm-hmm. and under the hood it had kind of a cool Grand National look to it with that turbo shield that you know that says GN on it or whatever, but modern day electronics, modern day transmission, and it's like 475 horsepower or something, where the original one was what, like 245 or mm-hmm. or whatever. So they actually made like a really nice interpretation of a Grand National out of this thing with a modern driveline. So kind of an interesting
piece. Big single turbo is a good look.
Yeah, they look good. They did a good
job. You know, the big single turbo with the shroud around it, the heat shroud, that they had their own modern take on. But it was good looking. And, you know, it kind of harkens back to when I kind of tell people, you know, you don't always want the biggest rims with the thinnest series tires you can fit on the car, the most turbos or whatever. There's kind of an element of this thing, you know, ran back in the day with 60, 65 series tires on it or something. Don't put the 35 series on it. Like, get sort of tip the cap to the older look.
Yeah.
And I've never been more impressed by one turbo. Because, like, right. we normally, you see the twin turbos, and we love the piping, and then there's kind of the reverse screw ones, which are called...
The mirror image ones,
and the custom headers, and you go, oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. But this is one turbo that's really cool, but it's cool if you appreciate it. I mean, it's cool if you know the history of it.
Yeah.
I don't know that Mike August thought it was cool, but I thought it was cool because we know the history and you not going with a, you know, V8 crate engine.
Yeah.
But a six with smaller displacement. Like that's the way to do it.
And I think we're going to start to see more creative builds. With different engine platforms. We see a few, but it's going to be more of a thing. And then this whole like reinvented, reimagined, you know, like what Singer started with Porsche. We're going to start to see more of that and not just be Porsche. There's other good jumping off points. I mean, Porsche's great, and Singer's proven that. But we're going to start to see some more interesting ideas, like the group in Europe that does the Z car. And
well, how about the Bronco guys?
Yeah.
I mean, I was hanging out at a booth talking to a Bronco guy. God, I can't remember. Out of Pennsylvania, maybe.
I forgot the name of it, but
$800,000 Bronco that they're just doing. And I think they're repopping everything on a lot of those cars. That's the other thing, too. Like, you know, it used to be, well, there are only so many shells of Broncos or 911s or, you know, floating around out there. You know, it's interesting. Speaking of Mike August, he hates carbon fiber.
I know. And everyone's going toward carbon fiber. Like the Dodge booth literally had the Charger in all the old Charger in all carbon fiber now.
He hates it, but he's covered his Infiniti SUV with matte black tape all over it.
Yeah.
What is it? You know what I mean? Like, which is it, Mike? If you don't like this look, then don't recreate it on your own vehicle.
Yeah.
Now, look, it's matte black is not carbon fiber, but if you step back 9 feet, it basically just looks like matte black or gloss black.
He was poo-pooing on every carbon fiber piece. And
it was ridiculous. We're looking at a picture of the guy's car.
I didn't know he did that.
He did the hood now. He did the hood.
What's going on? He can't afford a full wrap?
He's done some chevrons on the side. I think there's some chevrons on the side. He's done, he did the hood, did a racing stripe down the hood now.
We got to stop taking him to SEMA because I don't know if it's rubbing off in a bad way, but this thing is ugly.
You'd think he would be inspired by the carbon fiber.
Yeah. By the way, I love the picture with the blurred out license plate on Mike August's car. Who gives a fuck? No one's going to take his QX50.
And who wouldn't recognize this piece of shit?
Like, if you saw this thing on the road, you'd be like, I get it now. It's Mike August. All right. Anyway, what's going on in the car world? As we're here recording this, there's an auction going off, an R.M. Sotheby's auction, and Michael Schumacher's 2003 Formula One car. I think he won the championship in eight or nine races in this vehicle. One of the last of the V10 F1 cars. The estimate was 7.6 to 9.6 million. It did sell. Do you have a thought? Do you have a guess?
They've been trying to get all the money in the world for the sort of more modern day F1 cars, and they just haven't really got what they think they're worth. I mean, you saw that Newman Haas, IndyCar auctions, and it was like, there wasn't anything over $1 million. Like Mario Andretti's championship winning, it was $400,000. Yeah. Indy is, way behind F1, obviously. The cars that are getting all the money in the world are the mid-80s rally cars.
They're doing well. But we saw Schumacher car go before do well. We saw Niki Lauda F1 car go well.
If it's sold, they're coming on. They're coming on. I'll say toward the lower end of the estimate at 7.7.
Well, then maybe they're really coming on. $14,873,327.
Wow, and I give that whole speech.
It was twice your guess, roughly. But I think this blew everyone away. I mean, even the auction house was optimistic at $9.4 million was kind of their sort of verbal number they were going for. All in at $14.8, almost $14.9 million.
Well, he's an icon, and it's probably his failing health, his health situation probably factors into the price a little bit, sort of after the artist dies, the paintings go up. But just the general, not burgeoning, but the F1 epidemic, which is exploding in the United States, especially after being sort of dormant for so many years.
I mean, you're right. pulling a little bit on the heartstrings. I think it helped that they brought this car out to the track. They brought out Schumacher's son.
Oh, right.
And they shot a nice video with him talking about it, driving it, racing it, him being there and seeing his dad in the car.
He's still in F1, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know, is he testing or is he driving an F1?
He was on a team, but I don't know if he's still on a team.
I just haven't followed it as much, so forgive me. I'm sure a bunch of listeners know all the details on Schumacher's son. I don't. But
wow.
But talking about auctions and talking about engines being, you know, rare engines being the thing that you're going to start to see at SEMA, there is coming up for auction. I think it's another like RM Sotheby's auction. I don't know the price or the estimate. I just saw it. A Ferrari Enzo V12 crate engine untouched, brand new.
Sorry, I got a cold. Ferrari Enzo, an Enzo engine.
An Enzo engine, but in a crate.
Is that like 04?
Yeah.
03?
And maybe Chris can find it, but there's a Ferrari Enzo crate engine coming up for sale. I don't know the story of how it came to be. Maybe somebody wanted a backup engine or something broke and they wanted a replacement engine. But here, you can literally see it in the crate. Maybe you could scroll through and kind of figure out what they think it's going to cost. But naturally aspirated, good-looking engine, carbon fiber intake.
Lamb.
That thing dropped in to some kind of SEMA build would be fucking cool.
That's kind of what we're talking about because
yeah, 200 to 300,000 is the estimate. No reserve.
You know, because you see so many of those cars, and sometimes even with the Ring Brothers, but a lot of guys, you know, and you go, let's pop the hood, and they already start apologizing. Like they're like, well, the customer, he's a Corvette guy, and he wanted the GM crate, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
they do their best to dress up the valve covers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and also, you know, you don't want to add $300,000 to the budget, but at some point,
yeah, it works. It's reliable.
That lump is going to go next level.
I think $200,000 to $300,000 is an insane number for an engine, and I still think it's going to blow away the estimate. Yeah. I think someone's got their sights on this. A few people have got their sights on this going, I'm going to build something cool. This is going to be the centerpiece of a $1 million build, probably 1.5 by the time they buy this engine.
Or maybe you can get the engine from, who's starring Undercover Brother?
Eddie Griffin. Yeah.
Eddie Griffin did one of those Need for Speed, you know, knockoff things.
Yeah. Was it Redline?
Yeah, it was like Redline. And during the press conference, he crashed that Enzo into a barrier.
Yeah, at like Willow Springs, I think, or something.
I don't know where he was, but he hit that barrier pretty damn hard.
Yeah. And it's a crazy story because of some rich guy that had a bunch of cars and put all of his cars into the movie. That was his car.
Yeah.
Yeah. There it is. There's the Enzo. Oh, my God. That's terrible.
And there's a guy standing right there.
Yeah. He just plowed.
Now, I don't know if that car's totaled, but he tried.
Yeah, well, engine's in the back.
Well, that's true.
So they're salvageable.
All right. I can be found in Tucson at the Rialto Theater December 15th and then off to Tempe at the Improv December 16th and 17th. So come on out. Helium, Philadelphia, January 6th and 7th. And Dallas, Working Blue. We're doing a whole land cruise there with John Popper. Doing
He's
that
so
January.
Cool.
The greatest.
Just a good dude.
And a great musician. So you just go to adamkroll.com and you can get all the details. What do you got, Motorator?
I'm going to be posting some more stuff on social media all from SEMA, so just give me a follow at Motorator.
So, till next time, Adam Kroll for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndre, saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Get around for Halloween with Pluto TV's 31 Nights of Horror. All month long, Pluto TV is bringing you the best Halloween movies, shows, and more. Watch classic horror movies like The Grudge or The Blair Witch Project, or scream along with your favorite stars like Ryan Reynolds in Life. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows. The best part, it's so free, it's chilling. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start screaming now.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.